Every year, one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services, so your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. It's like your own personal post office. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
Now, as you've probably been hearing, Prince Harry is to publish a memoir, and it's already been announced who will do most of the actual writing. Ghostwriters get little of the credit and often even less of the money. Andrew Crofts has worked as a ghostwriter for decades and is also the author of Confessions of a Ghostwriter. He joins us now on News Talk. Good afternoon, Andrew.
Good afternoon, Sean.
It strikes me there's a particular skill at being a ghostwriter, to the extent that a ghostwriter can't afford to have the ego that a named writer, if you like, would.
No, you have to suspend all ego, really. You have to be completely interested in what they've got to say and just accepting it at face value for as long as you're doing the book. You just don't argue and so on, because otherwise you will clam them up.
Yeah,
they will stop talking.
The chap that Prince Harry is going to get to ghostwrite his book. Can you tell us something about him?
Yes, I don't know him personally, but yeah. His reputation is very good. He did a very good book for Andre Agassi, which was where Agassi talked a lot, I think, about his drug problems very openly and candidly, and I think that J.R. Moeinger dealt with that very cleverly. I think he's done another one, isn't he, for one of the founders of Nike or somebody like that? But he's a journalist of repute before that, which is quite unusual, because journalists aren't always terribly comfortable ghostwriting, because they're often people with very strong opinions. And so they do tend to, you know, put their own stamp on a story rather than listening. But he's obviously an exception.
Right, yeah. But he has won a Pulitzer for his journalism. So, we'll
yeah, see. He has. Yeah, no, he's top grade. Yeah.
And as I understand it, you started out by just putting an ad in the bookseller, was it?
Bookseller. Well, I was struggling to make a living as a writer, like everybody does. And it occurred to me that rather than writing entire books and then trying to find people to buy them, it would be better to actually ask people what they needed writing and actually, you know, a bit like a carpenter knocking on doors and saying, is there anything I can do for you, rather than building a really expensive piece of kit and trying to flog it. Nobody did that at that. This was about 30 years ago. Nobody did that then at all. But ghostwriting was all very secretive, and somebody whispered in the ear of an indigent writer, would you do a bit of ghosting for us? So I thought that I had to reach publishers and libraries and all those people, the sort of people that people would go to ask for a ghostwriter. And the bookseller seemed the best thing. So I had a little ad that said ghostwriter for hire, which ran for about 15 years.
Wow.
Until the internet. Yeah, I just, every week I would run it. And most weeks nothing happened at all. But then every so often somebody, you know, a publisher or an agent or an individual, wasn't so much individuals in those days because the bookseller is a trade magazine. But then the internet came along, and of course, you know, everything changes, and you just have to have a website and you're get your search engine optimization going.
And over the decades that you've been doing this, because people might have a perception that ghostwriters just, you know, it's just for celebrities. But it's not really. It's all sorts of people.
Absolutely not. No, it's for anybody who has a really good story but doesn't have the ability or the will to write it. It takes a bit of practice to write 80 to 100,000 words. So somebody who's been white slave traded somewhere, or somebody who's been playing football all their lives, or somebody who's been doing anything but starting a business, won't really have had time to do it and may still not have time. So it can be people, you know, anyone who's had some sort, you know, they could be someone in the army who's had, you know, one of those SAS type adventures, or it could be somebody who's had an abused childhood and wants to get it off their chest. They all need help.
And has it changed over the years in that, as you said, you know, back when you started, it was all quite secretive. Now are perhaps people a bit more open
People understand how the world works much better, don't they? I think because of reality television and because celebrities have been much more. I mean, people like Katie Price and the Beckhams don't pretend that they've written their own books. They're all very open about it. And we've all seen programs about how singers are invented and how actors get that. We just know how the world works. And then Robert Harris wrote a book, The Ghost, which was very successful and became a film with Ewan McGregor and Pierce Brosnan. So that gave a very clear indication of how the ghosting business works with a prime minister.
Yeah.
And so I think people just got the hang of it. Yeah.
And you did actually, write a book with Pete Bennett, who won Big Brother. He was asked about writing, he says, "Well, I didn't write it. This posh bloke came along with a tape recorder."
Yeah, yeah. Yes, honest to a fault. Yeah. I mean, he was interesting because he became so famous so quickly, and he was so endeared himself to the general public. Everybody loved Pete, but of course, when you win something like Big Brother or The X Factor, your time in the spotlight is very limited unless you go on to something else. So the publishers had to get the book out of him very, very quickly to cash in on all the people who'd fallen in love with him while he was on the box.
And is that a challenge for you in the sense that, I don't want to just pick on him, but you probably come across individuals where there's only really one bit of their lives that's the story, and the rest of it is as humdrum as anybody else's life.
It can be. It wasn't in the case of Pete because he had an extraordinarily colourful life. So first of all, Tourette's is extremely interesting. You know, how do you get it and how does it completely transform your life? He'd also been heavily into the Brighton drug scene and had that was all very interesting. Yeah, it is hard if you get somebody who's just, say, an actor who's just been acting away for 20 years and then gets a starring role in something that makes them a household name. And they actually have nothing to talk about but acting. I did a book with Gillian Tailforth years ago, who was in EastEnders. And the reason the book was so good was because she was in the middle of suing Rupert Murdoch. I don't know if you're old enough, Sean, to remember. She had tons of other stuff to talk about. So we didn't just have to talk about, what Doc Cotton said to her on the set, which can be difficult if you're doing 80,000 words.
And what do you do, though, if you have to do your 80 or 100,000 words and you say there's not enough in this individual to fulfill that?
Well, when you're an old hand like me, you say to the publisher, no, I don't think I can do that. But if when you're at the beginning, you just have to find things to say. You just keep asking them more and more questions, and you ask about, their relationship with their aunts and uncles and cousins and, memorable things from their childhood. And it doesn't always make for a terribly gripping book, but it's often what the publishers want.
Yes.
Because that person is terribly famous at that moment. But that, I mean, those books do not do terribly well. They tend to sell very, few numbers at the time. Mm. You can only really get the public engaged with celebrity books now if there's something about that celebrity that they still want to find out. I mean, I think that's why Prince Harry is on to a winner here, because there's still stuff that the public really doesn't know yet what happened and wants to know. If you go for somebody like, Elton John's book did sell really well, but I think that must have been quite hard for the ghost, because what do we not know about Elton John?
Yeah,
he's been around so long and we've read so much about him. I mean, that's not a criticism. I mean, he's a completely, an open book, as you say.
Sometimes you must have come, because my partner has been listening to the Sinead O'Connor memoir, and there's a big section in Sinead O'Connor's life, she actually doesn't remember that much. So, you're going to go, God, I wish you remembered more. Yeah, you must come across that problem as well.
There is that problem. Then sometimes you can find a relative who can write. And with Pete, because Pete obviously couldn't remember an awful lot for a similar reason, probably. And so his mum came and, we talked a lot and then and nudged his memory. Sinead O'Connor is a goddess, isn't she? So it doesn't matter what she writes. It's always going to be interesting. I as a ghost, you would say, can I borrow your address book and ring round a few people who might have been there and might jog your memory. But I think, I mean, she's quite volatile, isn't she? So I don't know if she would want to hear what other people said about her without
I don't think you would, because I don't think it was ghosted. I think she wrote it herself. She wrote it very well.
She's a
very good writer, actually.
She's an incredible star, isn't she? I mean, she's a one-off.
But
she's a very good example of why, to, you know, someone who the public still wants to know an awful lot about her, because she's just such an interesting character and so complex, and has such interesting ideas, as well as the fact that she sings like an absolute angel.
Do you have to fact check what people tell you, or is that given over to someone else?
I don't. No, the publishers have to do that. But on the whole, I would check if it strikes me as unlikely what they're telling me, then I will question it. I'll say, are you absolutely sure that it was, you know, in that year? Because I don't think that works, because so-and-so wouldn't have happened or whatever. So if you can do it in a conversational way, then that's fine. But I am writing the book that they would write if they could. So if they swear that black is white, that is what they would have put in the book, and then it's up to the publishers to say, no, you can't say that is wrong,
right?
Or more likely their lawyers will say, you can't say that, you'll get sued. So what I'm doing is my whole purpose is to coax more out of them, not to make them self-conscious and worried that they might have got a date wrong or you know, I mean, if they're telling outright fibs, then that will become apparent as the process goes along.
Mm. Now, you did mention some names of people you work with. I assume, though, also that there have been plenty of NDAs and non-disclosure agreements during the course.
A lot of NDAs. Yes, the majority. The majority want NDAs signed. They tend to want NDAs signed if they have managers and PR people and things. It's their people who want everything tied up really tightly with lawyers. If you're dealing with somebody direct, they usually, you know, because the idea is to get a relationship where you don't need an NDA because they trust you so completely, and they know that you're not going to go off and leak to a newspaper without their permission or anything like that. But some people have a lot to lose. I mean, if it's a business, you know, somebody who runs a multi-billion-pound business, there's a lot at stake. If a ghostwriter went off and told, you know, share prices could crash or something.
Yes.
So they tend to be a little bit more cautious. And I'm always happy to sign up to everything, because I'm never going to talk about the book until they tell me I can.
Yes, indeed.
Or, you know.
And I suppose when in the NDA situation, you can't talk about it at all in perpetuity.
Correct. Yeah. Although once they're dead, it's probably all right.
Especially
if they're going to die before me. Even then, if there's a brand involved, that might not work, right?
And even though you obviously have to remain dispassionate and leave your ego at the door, have you had to work with individuals you didn't particularly like, or, you know, in another set of circumstances, you'd cross the street to avoid them?
Yes. Yeah, some of them I like more than others, but I've always been interested in them, even if I didn't particularly like them or they weren't the sort of people I would have chosen to hang out with. I'm still interested enough to keep asking questions, because that's, you know, when they first come to you, the first question is really, do I want to know more about this person? Because if I'm not interested enough to ask questions, then the reader's not going to be interested by anything I can find out about.
Yes, that's true.
So it's, you know, it's somebody that I think, well, that's intriguing. How did he do that? And why did he do that? And what happened when he did that? And how did it feel when he did that? So I've got to want to ask all those questions. And if you're interested in somebody, you probably end up liking them on the whole, don't you?
Right. Okay. And when it comes to the finished product, though, I mean, that you could have an individual who go, I have this fascinating story that you must lead with this. And then you go, isn't that fascinating? Can that be a tricky process?
Yeah, sometimes, but usually that gets weeded out early on, because they come and they say, I want to do a book, you know, and I want you to find me a publisher and all the rest of it, and you very quickly discover that no publisher is interested because they actually haven't got anything to say, and then, you know, or you just, they're just not of interest to the general public. But then there are some books which are only going to be of interest to a very small number of people, and so then it's a question of if they want to pay for publishing, so then you're only going to publish a couple of thousand copies.
Yeah. And does it vary wildly in terms of, you know, an advance you might get, or would you get a percentage of sales, or is it just a flat fee?
Advances, Yeah, I mean, the gigantic advances are very rare now. I mean, Prince Harry and the Obamas have probably sucked up the last of it. They used to hand out advances. The publishers used to hand out much bigger advances because they could then sell serial rights to the newspapers to get their money back. So they'd pay you 100 grand and get 200 from the Daily Mail. But those days are gone. The papers don't pay that anymore, and publishers have dropped their advances. So I tend to do more books where there is a fee involved now. Or if it is a royalty, then I don't expect to earn an awful lot from it. Mm-hmm. I'm doing it because I think it's a really interesting story. I mean, the best ones are the ones that sell year after year after year after year, rather than the ones that burn brightly and then burn out. You can get to number one in the charts by selling 10,000 copies as long as you sell them all in 1 week.
Yes.
But the books that really sell, 100 copies a week for 40 years are the ones that are rarely paying, because you just keep getting royalty checks
indeed.
20 or 30 years.
I assume you have a book coming out. Can you tell us what it is, or is that
the one I have coming out next is already out in South Africa, and it's the best selling book by any South African author at the moment. So that's very good.
Okay.
It's for a Sudanese refugee who's become a terribly successful COVID-fighting pulmonologist down in South Africa. But his story is mainly about how he escaped from Sudan down to South Africa. It's called The Boy Who Refused to Give Up. And it's coming, and who never gave up. It's coming out on August the 5th, I think, in the UK from Icon Books.
Right.
And that's a brilliant story.
Okay. Andrew, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Andrew Crofts there, ghostwriter. You've heard what his latest book is called, an author of Confessions of a Ghostwriter.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
Every year, one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services, so your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. It's like your own personal post office. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.